So I'm going to call this meeting to order for the Polk County Board of Commissioners and others, elected officials, and open a public hearing for, with the purpose to take testimony from community members regarding a potential to put a 45 cent per thousand tax levy on the ballot in May of 2015. Before we get into that, a few ground rules are that public testimony is limited to 3 minutes per person. I'm going to ask you to please, if you have statements and questions to make, try to get that all in your 3 minutes. We are going to time you. You may hear a buzzer. Time to finish your sentence, your statement if possible, but do try to keep it that in that 3 minute range. We have folks that are, we have a number of folks that want to speak. We want to give everybody a chance to be able to say something or ask their questions. And if we get through those quickly, you know, we've got plenty of time. We'll see to it that everybody gets a chance to participate here and try to have some reasonable dialogue. But anyway, get your questions, comments all together on that, and then if there are questions, and we'll try to answer those so that we can give the next person a chance to come up. So I'm Commissioner Craig Pope, and I'm currently the chair, and I'm going to start to my left and let everyone introduce themselves.
Okay, I'm Jennifer Wheeler, Commissioner.
I'm Matt Hawkins, I'm the Administrative Services Director for Polk County, and tonight specifically filling in for Greg Hansen, our Administrative Officer.
Bob Wolf, Polk County Sheriff.
I'm Commissioner Mike Ainsworth.
I'm Aaron Felton, District Attorney.
Marty Sobernagle, Director of Juvenile and Adult Corrections.
Okay. So, as we go through this, we have this relatively informal, but we're going to have an introduction to some of the specifics of what a levy would look like and some of the purpose and reason for what we're doing, purpose and need. And so Mr. Hawkins is going to give you some summary of the background and information there. It'll help give you a little bit more context to ask your question.
So, I'll cover... Craig said the reasons that we're here tonight, specifically in November, Mr. Hansen, our administrative services or administrative officer, put together a memo that he put around to our board of commissioners, and his recommendations that we look at going out for an operating levy for public safety. Specifically, he has recommended that that levy be at 45 cents per thousand assessed value for a duration of 5 years. That meaning if you have a $150,000 home, the cost of that levy would be $67.50 per year for a whole year. Obviously, $200,000 home, it would be $90 for the year. As I'm sure many of you are aware, there has been severe cutbacks in public safety at Polk County, mostly to the sheriff's office, and I'm sure the sheriff will address many of those cutbacks. In the years at our peak in 2008 to 2009, we had approximately 112 FTE, and when I use FTE, I'm talking about full-time employees. So, and that was in all of public safety, which would be our sheriff's office, community corrections, and covers some juvenile department as well. Since that time, drastically have been cut back to our current state where we're at 78.45 employees. The levy specifically would allow for the county to hire back 22 FTE, which does not take us back up to that high level, but more around an area that is more manageable than the current state, allowing the sheriff's office to go back to, Sheriff, you're going to correct me if I'm ever wrong on this, but 24/7 patrol, which I'm sure everyone is aware is not the case right now, and again brings us back up to just over 100 FTE. Again, the reasons for this recommendation from Mr. Hansen are simply the fact that we have been cut back so far that there's no longer 24/7 patrol. We have, while we're still able to run the jail based on the fact that the jail, when it was built and created as the most efficient jail in the state of Mississippi, is that a fair assessment? To use a term that I grew up with, and it's still, when an employee goes out, still costs overtime. This would allow us to alleviate some of that. So I want to give a little bit of a breakdown, those 22 employees, and give you some more information as well. Specifically, 12 employees would be for patrol deputies to, again, bring 24/7 coverage back to the county. 5 positions would be in the jail, as I mentioned. That would reduce our overtime and provide for court security, of which we have none right now. And I'm sure the sheriff will discuss point a little bit. I'm not going to touch on that. Another 5 positions would go to the district attorney's office, which would be for 3 attorneys and 2 support staff. And then finally, it would actually add also 2 additional detention beds for juvenile offenders. So in Polk County, we don't have our own detention, and we have to contract beds with Yamhill County as well as Marion County. And this would add 2 additional beds. An example is this. If a youth is picked up on a Measure 11 crime, they're going to sit in detention and take up those beds for a very long time while they're waiting to go to trial. That means that if any youth who is on probation to the county is found to have violated his probation or her probation, and the judge sentences them or orders them to go to detention, or the probation officer needs to sanction them to detention, it actually costs us more money. It's roughly $162 a day per bed. Is there anything else you
want to cover on that? That's a good start.
Okay. So,
Sheriff?
Yeah, Commissioner, thank you. The impacts have clearly have been pretty significant. Since 2008, the sheriff's office was lost. Out of the patrol division, we've lost 14 deputies. We've lost 10 full-time employees out of the jail. Most of those were control room techs that operate our control room. And so I ended up having to make budget reductions in one of the years since 2008 to make a $250,000 reduction to that budget. So I ended up laying off control room techs and then brought back 3 deputies. And so now we move people around in the jail. Your county jail that you folks all voted for when the bond measure was passed to build it and to operate it was designed and built as probably, as Matt's referred to, one of the most efficient and effective jails in the state of Oregon right now. We operate that jail with 5 employees. There's no other jail in this state that operates a 204-bed jail or a higher capacity that can operate it with 5 employees because of the design of the jail. Operating it with 5 employees is a minimum number, and it is costing me and the budget, which through your taxes is costing you a lot of money in overtime, because right now we are so short that if someone calls in sick or we have to send them to mandatory training, we're paying overtime. And so we're paying another employee to come in on their day off or between shifts to come and cover a shift. We also have issues with court security, and that is a huge problem for us because, as your sheriff, under Oregon law, I'm mandated to answer the call of the court, and the courts are being very cooperative with us, but nonetheless, at times when they want court security, I have to provide it, and that means I either call somebody in from home or I pull a deputy off of the road, and if deputies aren't in because they don't come on until 12 o'clock, then it's myself or a detective or a patrol lieutenant that goes up and stands in the courtroom and takes care of court security issues. The problem with that is if something bad happens, we're all scrambling to try to get up there, and if we would have been there to start with, it probably wouldn't have had a problem that developed. those are some of the issues that we're dealing with currently. Your patrol division has been reduced to 10 hours a day. That happened on March 29th of 2014. Again, as a result of this loss of timber funding. This has all been a result of the loss of timber funding. It has not been a result of any other thing that a lot of people seem to want to talk about, that the commissioners are holding money someplace and they're not giving it to public safety. I'm here to tell you, as your elected sheriff, that that is not the case. What is the case is that they're giving the Board of Commissioners and the Budget Committee, when they meet, they're giving us all the money that they can out of general fund. There are still other divisions that still have to operate as well. And if they weren't giving me that money, myself and I believe our district attorney at the other end, and probably Mr. Silvernagle, would all be making life a lot more difficult for the commissioners and the Budget Committee, because if that money is there, why isn't it not being sent towards public safety, which is critical to your safety and your communities? They're giving us everything that they can, but there's only so much money to go around, and so we are operating with what is left when you take away, you know, $2.4 million that was there that supplemented your taxes instead of you having to have your taxes raised. Now we're to the point where the only way we can restore any of these services is through a ballot measure that would, in fact, be what we're considering here as a 45 cents per thousand assessed value on a five-year levy. Without that, things are not going to get any better. We're going to continue to see changes that aren't good in our community. I can tell you that with our arrest being way down, we're seeing more of the criminal element having an opportunity to do things when they haven't normally had that opportunity because of fear that they might encounter one of the deputies. For Fall City, you know, Fall City, when back in the 80s, when the sheriff that I worked for back then, Bill Berlin, had established up in Fall City the first resident deputy program in Fall City. And that required a deputy to actually live in the city. Nowadays, I'm through union contracts, I don't think that would be possible, but back in the 80s, that's what happened. Until the city decided, well, you know what, we'd rather have our own police department again, and they hired a police chief. And for a few years off and on, they continued to have their own police department here in the city. In 1999, there was an agreement signed with me as the sheriff to put an officer up here 52 hours a week. And at the end of that contract period, because it was also supplemented by federal funding through a grant that we had applied for, upon the end of that in 2001, the sheriff's office left and no longer provided law enforcement services on a contracted basis. And then it was around 2004, the city approached me, city council approached me again about recontracting, but the cost was a lot higher. So they thought about going out for their own levy, which failed. And so since then, you've really relied upon the sheriff's office for your law enforcement services here in the city of Fall City. We respond to calls here in Fall City just like we do any place else in the rural part of the county. And the calls are based off of the priority in which they come in and the availability of officers. Of course, right now, you have no officers that are available after 10 o'clock at night until noon the next day. So these cuts have been significant, and they're not going to get any better. That's the reason that we're here taking the input from you as citizens to try to help the commissioners make a decision on if to go out for a levy, and if so, when. And unless something were to change, you'll not see any increase in patrols in Polk County. I'm struggling right now with the fact that depending upon what happens at this next fiscal year coming up, I may end up having to take more deputies off the road to help supplement the jail, because I can't continue to keep spending the overtime expenses that I'm paying out in the jail right now, and running the people as hard as I'm running them. Because, and the other thing that's difficult is, if I put an officer in the jail and they stay there for more than 6 months, then I have to send them to the academy, get them certified as a corrections officer. So then I lose time, because now they're getting training as a corrections officer. There are two different disciplines. A corrections officer cannot come out and do patrol functions, and a patrol officer, while contemporarily working the jail, they still have to go back to the academy for 5 weeks of training, 6 weeks of training now, if in fact they stay assigned over there. So two different jobs, two different certifications under the state of Oregon. So I've been questioned before in previous meetings about, why don't I just take some of the corrections officers out of the jail and put them back on the road. Well, they weren't on the road. They've always been corrections officers, and to send them to become regular police officers with a police officer certification, that requires 16 weeks of training. So I would lose that person for 16 weeks. So our drug team, known as Point, has not been active since March. We are seeing the impacts of that. Some of the cities are starting to deal with more drug issues in their cities now. That's pretty much a direct result of the fact that the people that were out working narcotics and working undercover to try to reduce the amount of drugs coming through our county and through your cities are not there now. And we just had a meeting yesterday with what's called the Point Board. And while a couple of the cities have officers that could return to it, we don't have enough that can return to sustain any significant operation through the cities. And I just don't have the person, because I ended up having to move one of my sergeants who was in charge of the Point team as a supervisor. He's now been reassigned to detectives to fill the vacancy that I have. So I guess really the main point I was wanting folks to understand, and I think it's important for you to understand, is that it's the loss of ONC timber revenue. It's not a change in how the county's been doing business. They just don't have the money that they used to get. Instead of raising taxes years ago, they chose to use ONC timber money instead of raising taxes. So that's all I have for an opening.
Okay, thank you. Dave Felton.
Thank you. Mr. Commissioner, I really appreciate listening to Sheriff Wolf. Anytime Sheriff Wolf talks, I appreciate his years and experience talking about these issues, because he's lived obviously through the sort of the good times and the leaner times. And since I'm the newest member of the elected public safety team here in the county, I appreciate the sort of the long experience he's had. And for me, my department is different in that it really kind of umbrellas over not only the county law enforcement in terms of what the sheriff is doing, also what Mr. Silbernagle does, but also what each of the cities do in terms of what the policing agencies do, because our services directly cover each of those agencies. And so we are directly going to be impacted by if this levy passes, we'll be able to return those services if we get additional employees in terms of attorneys and staff people directly to the cities, obviously Falls City directly, but to the countywide in terms of being able to up our level of services to each of the cities and also the county. Countywide as well. The real, I try to, distill this as to where we are in terms of Polk County being compared to the rest of Oregon, is the fact that Polk County, in terms of just our population, we have approximately 76,000 people in Polk County based on the last census. Just taking that alone, we are the smallest department, just in terms of lawyers, criminal prosecutors in the state. We have four criminal prosecutors. The county pays for three of those. I'm a full-time criminal prosecutor too, but I'm a state employee. State of Oregon pays my salary. The county chips in for my office furniture and supporting me that way. But the county doesn't pay any of my salary. But so essentially you have four criminal prosecutors. And that is significantly less than other similarly sized counties in the state. It's not always apples to apples, if this levy were to pass just on numbers alone, that would be a significant, I call it transformational, but three additional deputies, prosecutors in this office would be a remarkable difference. You know, what we're not able to do right now, we don't do child abuse cases. We don't do juvenile dependency cases in this office. We do delinquency cases, and there's a difference between the two. Child welfare cases, not to be totally technical about child welfare cases, when DHS comes out and removes a child, we don't do those cases in our office. Department of Justice comes in and do those cases. That was a budget decision I made to save money. I don't think that's the best way of doing things because it takes us directly out of Polk County cases and Polk County families, and there's a real connection between the child abuse cases that happen in this county and the criminal cases that sometimes come out of that when adults abuse children, and we don't have that direct connection. That's a real loss, but that's part of the economics as well. I handle the drug cases, but I also handle Measure 11 felony cases. I think even though we don't have our point team back up, at some point I think that it's likely that we might. I think we need to have a full-time drug prosecutor handling drugs, drug prosecution in this county, because there's still drugs being bought, sold, and used in this county, and that includes marijuana, heroin, and methamphetamine. I'd like to have a full-time drug prosecutor in this county. And you have one, but I'd like to have one specifically detailed to it rather than splitting his or her time up, a piece here and a piece there. I'd like to have a full-time designated juvenile prosecutor taking those dependency cases and delinquencies. They've worked with Mr. Serwelinger's department exclusively on those cases. That is what a district attorney's office does. That is what they do in other counties. Polk County is not able to do that. And I believe that this county suffers as a result of that. And Sheriff Wolf is exactly right. It's because of the loss of timber revenues, not because of decisions that this commission has made or past commissions have necessarily made, but not prioritizing law enforcement. Since I've been here, and I've been here 2 years now, these commissioners have made law enforcement a top priority of their decision-making in their budgets and their policy. But it's just a matter of the dollars, what's here and what's not here. And the dollars aren't here. That's why we're at this decision-making process about what we can and cannot do. And because of the dollars that aren't there, there are things that we cannot do. When I came into office, one of the first things that happened in the first budget rounds I did, I had a full-time prosecutor position cut because of the budget cycle, and that impacted what we could do. Next time around, because of the economics, I had one of my DA2, there's a DA2, more experienced prosecutor, leave, went to another office. The economics, that was replaced at a DA1 level, a less experienced prosecutor came on board. I was grateful to have another prosecutor, believe me, rather than having it not replaced at all. That was a good thing. But there's an experience loss. Like anything else, like good law enforcement people, like any professional, attorneys, the longer you can keep them, higher experience level are better in terms of the better kinds of prosecutions, the better trial attorneys they are. My desire is to continue to add and build the best attorneys I can get for this county, and that takes the ability to keep them. One of the problems we have in my department, same as other departments, is that attorneys, when they come young, they train up and they go to other agencies. Someone right now in my department, one of my best DA1s, is leaving to go to Multnomah County. It's closer to home to him because he lives up there, but it's also, it's the pay differential is quite significant as well. So I'm not asking to be able to make to pay anyone Multnomah County can pay. But one of the things having additional folks is the ability to spread out the work a bit more so that we can handle all the prosecutions coming through our office. So I'm looking at hiring out right now to make a decision about, am I going to be emphasizing misdemeanors or felonies? And that's a decision I have to make in terms of what we can do in my office. And frankly, if I'm looking at a smaller number of deputies that I have, and being able to keep them longer, I may be looking at felonies. And that's a decision, you know, if that's what we have, I may have to make. So one of the things about having more deputies, and if I can't prosecute the cases that they bring me, and or frankly, they bring me good cases. Get good cases from the sheriff's office. But I also get really, really good cases, and I'm still getting really, really good cases from Monmouth, Independence. Salem brings me good cases. OSP brings me good cases. So we're still getting lots and lots of good cases. And our ability to effectively prosecute all of them is challenged by the reduced numbers that we have. So that's kind of the spot I'm in, and I'm happy to answer any questions about what we do in the DA's office. And I thank you all for coming out tonight.
Thank you. Commissioner Hansberry?
No, I'm good. I'm here to listen.
Okay. Commissioner Whalen? Anything we're missing, Marty, before we start asking questions? Panel ready? Okay. So I think I said this before, but in case I didn't, again, we have a sign-up sheet in the back. If your name is not on here, but you've decided by now that you want to speak, we really need your name on a sign-up sheet. There is another one in the back room, so please do that. We're going to ask for you to come up here, please, and address the board when I call your name, and give us your name and address for the record so that the recording can pick it up. And we'll try to get everybody through, and if anybody else wants to think of something while this is happening, they can certainly sign on the next sheet and we'll get everybody in. So, Rose Dorn. Yeah, reminder, 3 minutes, questions, statements, best you can, and then we'll try to answer them afterwards.
Well, I'm going to give you the other side of the coin, okay? All right, it appears to me that the property owners are being discriminated against, okay? When I moved here, with the thing about moving here, I was told that property taxes were capped at $3,000 a year. So my taxes are now nearing $4,000 already, and I'm a modest one. All right, let's see. So I don't know about increasing my property taxes. I believe there's a lot of mismanagement of our tax dollars, and a good example is the Salem River Crossing and the Columbia River stuff that I've read about that had about $6.5 million of our tax, taxpayer money wasted over about a 9-year period, the newspaper said it, they thought it was time for some adult supervision and time to pull the plug on that, and I certainly would agree if it hasn't already been done. Seems that too many people have control of our tax dollars. That shouldn't too much crony capitalism and NGOs. We have had minimal growth in this county. Responsible financial managers should be finding ways to shrink government instead of growing it. You were talking PERS. I was reading your budget. You were talking PERS. Well, we all know what goes into that. We have many different salary increases in PERS, as well as your retirements, et cetera, et cetera. So increase 44% over the last 10 years. Well, we can only surmise that with salary, that in the future, salary increases would certainly, you're talking about $7 million for government salaries here, if I've read that right. And in the future, of course, it would be a lot more than that. So, I mean, I don't know where all this money is coming from, but I don't have this kind of money. So then we, the people, are supposed to pay for all of the indigent care, medical, food, Section 8 housing, welfare benefits. I mean, you name it. We're now feeding school children 3 times a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know what? I live on $60,000 a year. And That's before taxes. And we're counting federal, state, county, city, incidental taxes. Now we have new Obamacare insurance, which we now have to pay for. And high auto taxes in the state and county. And you know what? I don't have a union. So, our founding fathers talked about the fact that we should never have unions in government. And the reason for that is that your governments can keep taxing you for salaries, etc. We end up having to pay for everybody else's low-income stuff, but we don't have anything in the middle. We're getting taxed to death.
So I'm going to stop you there, and I'm going to go ahead and take this as a you don't support this levy.
Zero.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amy Hotalin.
Amy Hotalin, 137 Cary Court, Fall City. I want to take just the first few seconds to acknowledge the patrol division and the jail division. I've already done this via email as mayor, but as a citizen, I'd like to acknowledge that your deputies have taken all these cuts in stride and really been honorable on the streets and really not, you know, when they can't come till after 12, they haven't had any excuses. It just is what it is. I deal with both divisions on a daily basis with one hat or another that I wear, and I just wanted to say that first off, that in my opinion, everybody is taking it in stride in those divisions, and kudos to those divisions. My questions are more to get information out to the community, not necessarily like pointed questions, and I have some questions for the district attorney, because I think that sometimes we don't think about that piece when we're talking about this levy. We're only thinking about patrol, and not all the citizens in Fall City are fond of the patrol or what it does or doesn't do. And I think that people aren't thinking about, you know, in order for the patrol does their job, there's got to be some more down the way. And also, so I wanted to find out, and you may not have these numbers because it is just now 2015, but I wanted to kind of do a comparison of how many felonies were convicted last year, misdemeanors, who was sent to jail, prison, and then compare how those numbers may have been 2 years ago and how those numbers may look in the future years. And I can slow down. I can even give these to you, and I can use my other copy. But that was kind of one the piece I wanted to touch on to educate the public. Okay.
You still have a minute left, so
okay.
If you have any
and
other
then
things.
My other question, and just more for information, is the patrol piece. As you know, a fair amount of our issues are the 18 to 25 year old knuckleheads. And it's usually over summer. And a lot of times we get an answer of, well, that's in your code enforcement. And of course, we don't have a code enforcement officer right now, and it goes round and round and round. So a lot of our citizens, I think, will be wondering, yes, it's sound is a code issue. Alcohol in the park is a code issue. Firearms in the park is a city code issue, but it's also a law issue as well. And so I'm wondering if that patrol issue piece might change if the levy passes, if you will be able to work on some of those things, even though they're also city ordinances.
So stay yeah. put if you don't mind.
Okay.
We'll let the district attorney address your questions
okay.
and then the sheriff.
Okay.
Because I can't give you 2014 because we don't have those numbers.
Anything to compare to.
I can give you I hate giving generalities because that always seems like I'm avoiding the issue. But what we find is that our misdemeanors overall in the past 2 years are down but our felonies have remained fairly consistent in terms of our intake numbers, which surprised us. but we find, the misdemeanors didn't surprise us because Dallas has taken a number of their misdemeanors back to the municipal court, so seeing those numbers down didn't surprise us at all. But seeing the fact that our felonies are reasonably consistent over the past 2 years in terms of our intake to court, so I can give you that. But let me get back to you on those exact numbers.
Okay.
What I do have, I just don't have 2014
right, and
numbers.
Even just 2013, like, yeah. You had 500 versus mm-hmm. 200, or, you know, I mean, I want the comparison.
Amy, if I may, I yes. believe back in the back where all the information is, there's a sheet that I prepared with respect to adult parole and probation, and I have those numbers in that information
okay.
with respect to felonies and misdemeanors from our office alone.
Okay.
That's not
that.
Aaron's entire office,
okay.
but it's our office alone.
Okay. Yeah, I looked at that, so I wasn't sure if that would answer my question.
But you're specifically looking for a trend line here.
I am. I want it to be documented in the paper or wherever we're documenting these things of how, you know, things were 2-3 years ago, how things are now, and how things could be or will be or won't be. I especially think that the cities that have their own police department don't think about that. And because they know their police are, so it's a bigger levy than just patrol. And I think that's what some people aren't getting out there. So that's my documentation.
With regards to city ordinance issues, alcohol in the park is a city ordinance violation. If it's a minor that has alcohol, then that's a state law issue and we can address those. The gun in the park, that's a city ordinance issue because the city regulates the gun being in the park, but there's also a right to carry issue under the Constitution, right to bear arms. So the city ordinance issue we can't address because as sheriff, I don't have authority to enforce city code. And so I can't grant that authority to my deputies. If in fact someone does have a weapon that's in the park and they're misusing it or they're shooting at somebody, then that trumps the city ordinance issue. We're not using that as an excuse. The reality of it is the officers really can't do anything with it when they get there. If we had, and back when we had more officers, we responded to a lot more of that stuff, even though we couldn't enforce it just because of the presence. But I'm down 14 deputies, and I'm only there 10 hours a day. So we handle those on a priority. To answer your question, if I had 14 more deputies and I was back to 24 hours, if the call load was down and we didn't have anything going on, we'd spend more time up here. We did before, and we will again. The problem is I just don't have the people.
Okay.
I knew that. I just wanted to say that.
All right. You know, and I can tell you, too, that currently, right now, I did run some numbers in preparation for coming up here. In comparing 2013 to 2014, we've seen a 19% increase for calls for service just inside the city of Fall City. And we've seen an 11% increase in the reports that have been taken. So we're putting in more time. And to show you the comparison overall, because I have less officers out there now, our entire calls for service are down 33% from what they were in 2013. So Fall City is actually getting a lot of attention with the limited 10 hours that we have available for patrol.
Okay.
Thank you.
You may think of other things, and as we get through this list, if we have time, you might want to cycle back.
Okay.
All right, Tracy Young.
Tracy Young, 146 Shelby, Fall City. I have questions on probation. I don't know which one of you want to answer this, but I need to know what services do you guys provide to clarify what I think probation is.
Okay. There's more than just probation. There's people on post-prison supervision, and then there are a few old-time parole people that are released from the state prison. So there's a variety of different type of offenders that we supervise. What do we do? There's a variety of things that we do. We conduct office visits. We collect about 425 P tests every month. We arrest on average 25 people in our office every month. There are roughly 700 people in the county that are under supervision, adult supervision. There are roughly another 175 youth that have a probation officer. Did I kind of answer?
Yeah, you kind of answered it. The other question is for Sheriff Bull. We have seen, as you said, an increase, and I have a feeling when you up your deputies, we will see a bigger increase, because I have lived here for 17 years, and it's getting way worse. Drugs are a big thing in this town. And I hope, I mean, I'm in proposed for the levy, yes, please. But I also want to be able to say that you're going to do diligence to Fall City as opposed to Grand Ronde. Because there's a lot of people in this town that look at Grand Ronde paying for three officers and poor little Fall City can't pay for anything because we don't have the taxes, tax base, and we're treated differently. That's how a lot of people in this town feel. How are you going to help?
Well, first of all, we don't contract with Grand Ronde anymore. And so, as I said, and I will continue to say, and as your sheriff will maintain the fact that Fall City is treated the same as any other part of the county. We answer calls and respond to calls based on the priority of the call, based on severity of the call, how important it is. And with the limited resources I've got, I can only send what I have when I have it. As we get more officers, when we were back in 2008, we were in Fall City quite a bit, and we did a lot of proactive approaches to things. When citizens called in with complaints of speeding vehicles, we set up speed trailers, and then we came up and did some traffic enforcement. When we had problems down at the falls, we sent deputies down there. When we had problems in the park, we sent deputies there. I've got to have the resources to be able to do that, and I appreciate your speaking in support of going for a levy, but there is no difference in Fall City. It doesn't matter that it's Fall City versus Grand Ronde or Airlie or PD or Ballston. It's based on the call priority. We have to handle the calls as they come in based on their severity of the call.
Okay, now what changes do you think we're going to see a more regulated time allotment of deputies coming out here at a certain time or like twice a day, or is this just going to be on call basis?
In 2008, when we had regular patrols, they were assigned to come through Fall City on a regular basis. Again, when we had issues that were coming up, then we would have briefings and we would target certain areas to come and patrol and make a stronger presence. I would never set any place up as being, well, we'll be there every day at 2 o'clock and drive around for 30 minutes. And it doesn't take long in Fall City because there's so many, not so many, there's so few entrances and exits that the minute that white car makes it into town, everybody knows it.
Well, we know it before you.
So.
I should say the bad guys.
But when we had more patrols, we had more flexibility to be able to address those issues and show up when we weren't expected to be here. And that's, you know, I would love to be back there and doing whatever we can.
Now, I understand, you know, what's going on, but we've had something that has happened in Fall City that I'm sure you gentlemen might be aware of. But we are seeing adults getting charged 5 or 6 counts on each of them, and they're still loose. They're still out. They go in, they get their charges, and they're back in town within an hour. Why is that?
30 seconds,
Well, I'll just take a stab at that. that's largely due to maybe the courts and whether the judge allows a release or whether somebody is allowed to post bail. They come up with money and they're out. So,
Marty, sorry, I'd agree with Marty to the fact that you have a jail in this county that holds people, and it's there's only two ways they get out. They either post bail, and then legally I have to release them, or the judge orders them released. Otherwise, they stay in jail, and that's why a lot of the criminal element does not like Polk County, because it clearly is, it's bail or jail. And we have room at the end.
Mm-hmm. We're hoping more room.
And I want to respond to that, because I'm quiet here. One of the most frustrating things I see happen is myself and my deputies go up and make a case for somebody remaining in jail pretrial, and we know we burn pretrial days and they get time served, and we lose it at the back end when we think someone may be a threat right then. The standard the court applies is what's the risk on them not returning to jail if they let them out on security. And so it's a frustrating piece. And I don't mean any disrespect to any judge, but it's something that frustrates us. So I share your frustration about folks you have concern about.
Yes, and we're close to, we're aware of the situation because this town is so tiny.
I probably know some of the people you're thinking about,
yes,
too.
I know you do. And, they were charged before it, and they got re-picked up, and then they got re-picked up, and I'm just going, what are you going to do with them? So, they keep picking them up.
And no disrespect, but I'm saying it's hard for me to say, well, this person's a knucklehead, Judge. You know it, and they ought to be staying in. That's not something the judge is going to hear me on. So, but every time we try to make a case that this person ought to stay in because we're a threat out there. But.
So how what's the length of time between when they get charged and when they get back?
You have a right to trial. You have a right to trial in 60 days, unless you waive that. That's why one of the reasons that we struggle is that we have these deadlines that we have to meet. And is that for me? Is that for me? Because I'm going to start getting wound up. I'm short on people to meet those deadlines, and people know that they can stick me with those deadlines, and I've got to make some hard decisions. And I need some more trial attorneys so that when we get people in there, we can move on those things and be ready to go. That's just the reality of being short on my team. So a few more people will help me be ready for trial.
But I think you need two more.
I'll take them.
Attorneys for just the drugs.
I have your offer, and I'll take them.
Okay, thank you, Terry Angry.
Terry Ungreach, 635 Chamberlain, Falls City. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for putting on the public meeting. I have just a couple questions. One is, I know, Mr. Chairman, that you've worked on trying to get money reopened off the OC Land Trust. Is there any hope in that?
Okay, and I can answer these questions if you have any other questions. All right, your time is not spent.
Yeah, I have a question for the sheriff. When I was talking to residents, a few things have come up. The answer in 9/11 calls is a big one, which you've addressed, but also curfew in the park. And I know that's a city ordinance. The county has the same ordinance in the county parks. Is there a way that an intergovernment agreement could be made that your officers could enforce curfew in our parks?
Is that the only two questions?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm done.
Mr. Chair?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Yes, there is the ability to do an intergovernmental agreement. When we contracted with the city, we had an intergovernmental agreement at that time to do it. It gets back to the resources. It doesn't do me much good to have that intergovernmental agreement if I don't have the people to be able to respond to it in the first place. But yes, an intergovernmental agreement could be established that would be from the council to my office, granting me the authority to enforce. That's the only legal way it can be done.
And I think that would go a long way of maybe helping support.
Okay, so O&C questions. So Yes, I work on that issue continuously. I'm confident all of you are tracking right now who's in charge in Congress right now. We have been, whether it's been ONC or general forestry issues, Secure Rural Schools, which is a nationwide coalition process initiative, all of those things have been stalled in the Senate over the last several years. So it is my hope and my expectation with leadership in both the House and the Senate in 2015 that we'll start to see that logjam break down a little bit and some opportunities for some legislation to start moving forward. But let's be really clear, no matter, this is just me talking, I'm not speaking for the whole board here, but my position or my perception of where we're heading is we'll never be back to that nearly $2.4 million of supplemental timber revenue that we once saw. I don't believe that the environmental slash conservation community will ever allow that to happen, nor will the Ninth Circuit or the Supreme Court eventually ever allow us to get to that level, because it means harvest levels that are back at a point in maybe we had in the 80s, and I just don't see that as a real likelihood. But it'd be nice to see half of that from actual timber management and harvest. And I think that is doable. So as I'm confident you know, and I'll repeat it for those who don't, you know, we've had a bill carried by three congressmen from this state that's been passed twice in the House of Representatives, and it has never had a hearing in the Senate. So we're hopeful, and that's H.R. 1526, and we're hopeful that in the first quarter of the 114th Congress, we're going to see that bill, which is specific to ONC trust land management. We're hopeful it will see that move forward. However, it is very clear to most of us at work this that President Obama has said, and he's vowed to make certain that that bill will be vetoed if it gets to his desk. But a number of us continue to push that, well, that's what we want him to do. If that's what he's about to do, we want to make him do it so that all of us can know who's responsible for that logjam once again. But all that said, we're still moving. We're still working. So that ONC trust bill still has life. It still has legs. If we didn't have a change in leadership in the Senate, I would tell you today that there was no chance of that moving forward. But all that's changed now. From my point of view, we also have new legislation on secure rural schools, which is the Wyden bill that was passed in 2001 that was the stopgap bridge funding while he was working on the forestry management bills back then, which got extended again in 2008 for a little bit lesser amount. And then, of course, since then, each reauthorization of secure rural schools has dropped to a point where now the last payment we got was 2013, and that was about $850,000 net to the county to use. So we went from $2.2 million of value down to $850,000, and statements from Wyden in 2014 while we worked on his version of what an ONC and Secure Rural Schools new forestry management bill would look like, that was coming down closer for Polk County in the $500,000 range. And folks like myself said, you know, when you get down to that point, and without real sustainability, though we'll take the money, the fact of the matter is that doesn't solve anything for us and any of the ONC or timber counties across the country, the whole nation. So the Secure Rural Schools funding issues are still out there. We would still like to see those dollars coming in. So we didn't get anything for 2014. Congress is saying, and John Boehner's office is saying, we're going to fix that. We'll try to get you that money that you should have gotten in 2014. We're going to work on that and try to get you something that's real sustainable bridge funding for 2015. I believe that when I see the actual bill signed by the president. We're a long ways out on that deal. And all of that in the guise of having a real timber management bill that changes how the BLM and the U.S. Forest Service do business. Again, I will tell you my own philosophy right now is under this administration, we are probably not going to see any substantive timber management change. We may see some gap funding changes, but I don't believe that that is anything that's going to spill the bill here that's going to fix what we're talking about. It'll help, And every dollar that we get, if we were to go out for this levy and pass it, our vow has been that any dollar we get beyond that from the federal government, we would use to reduce the ask or reduce that levy amount. So, you know, if we end up getting half of what the levy would fund us, for example, we would just levy half of what we said we would need. So we would use those federal dollars to offset that. So that's just a really quick snapshot of where we are. But I have vowed in my reelection campaign and continue to vow to you that those timber dollars still exist out there, and I'm not giving up that fight. So every dollar we can get, I'm going to go after.
Thank you very much.
So that's all the names I have on this list. Rod, do I have any other names back there?
Nope. Not one.
Okay, come on back.
Can I?
Yeah, absolutely.
A little more time.
We have time.
I thought of two more questions, kind of school district hat that I thought of that I'm not sure everyone knows about. So,
just again for the recording.
Oh, Amy Hotelling, 137 Perry Court, Fall City. Mr. Silbernagle, we talked about, someone asked you about what you do under your umbrella. Where does drug court and informal supervision come in? Is that also your department?
Drug court, is that your only question?
Yes, and the school district, no, it's not my only question. The school district has approached Sheriff Wolf about doing some proactive things here in the school, like deputies coming out and talking to the younger kids, or Deputy Bender coming out and showing the boat, and, you know, just doing some proactive kind of younger kid stuff. So I'm wondering if that might return with this too. So basically I'm talking proactive, like what, because if we can, you know, do the informal supervision in the drug court at ages, you know, 13 through 18 and prevent the future criminal from coming, is that this levy affect that as well?
Drug court right now that exists in the county is an adult program.
Okay.
That is not paid for out of county monies.
Okay.
That is state monies received through grant process. Okay. Juveniles have sanction court.
That's what I meant.
In which Commissioner Ainsworth is a regular one time.
Sanction court involves all juvenile crime, unless it's a major crime. And what we do in sanction court is we usually meet a couple times a month, and referrals through different police agencies. And so these participants come in, we already know the crime that they've been, whether it's smoking pot or drinking or stealing and stuff. And so we listen to them. There's a panel of seven or eight folks in each community that listens to what they have to say. And I'm going to take Central for instance. We have a lady that works in the school district office that deals with all their grades. And so we just let them talk, you know. And so we'll say, well, you know, I see you're, you know, you got caught smoking pot, you know. And I ask them, how many times are you smoking? Oh, you know, not very often. We kind of, you know, start talking to them a little bit longer, and it's like three times a week. And well, how are your grades in school? Oh, you know, I'm doing pretty good in school. Yeah. And then this employee of the school district goes, huh? And I go, we're here to be honest, okay? We really want them just to be honest, okay? We're already in trouble, okay? But we just wanted to be honest for one time, you know? And, well, you know, maybe flunk in a few classes. Well, how many is a few? Well, 5 out of 6. You know? But we sit there, and then after we listen to what they have to say, we will give them consequences for the actions that they've had. It's usually community service. If they have a drug issue, we will refer them to the county and have a drug evaluation or an alcohol evaluation. And these folks are all on the panel, other than a couple that work for the county, are all volunteers. And the recidivism rate for that group is about 7%. The last year. Is that about right, Marty?
Yes.
So 93 out of 100 of these kids we're never going to see again. But I will tell you this, you can almost tell who the 7% are going to be. Because sometimes mom and dad are the biggest enablers you've ever seen. Well, you know, as long as he's smoking pot with me at home, you know, it's okay. And to follow up on that a little bit longer about, you know, maybe not what the sheriff's doing, but what we're doing, and Marty and I and a couple other folks got together with the superintendent at Central. Now with the legalization of marijuana, which will take effect in July of 2015, we're trying to see how we can with juveniles, it is, at the high school level, how we can give them more information about the ills of smoking pot. Because I will refer back to drug court. Marijuana is a gateway drug. I don't care what anybody says, okay? This is my personal opinion. It's a gateway drug. Every participant that's been in drug court all started smoking pot. And then it wasn't quite strong enough. And then, you know, they need some meth or some cocaine or, and you know, heroin's big now because heroin's pretty cheap. So, and then they have to steal for it, you know. And it just, it's like a snowball. But Buzz Brazel at the Central School District, the superintendent, we're looking into a program where we can go and talk to the students and their parents for any type of extracurricular activity. Whether it's going out for sports or band or choir or FFA, and have a meeting with the parents and the kids to tell them the ills of smoking pot and, you know, illegal drinking and stuff. And this is the first group that we've talked with. Buzz has been very receptive to it. You know, there's some things that we still have to work out. But our goal with through the county is that we can do that in every school district. Because trust me, kids are smoking pot. It's kind of like, you know, they're saying, well, you know, you really shouldn't give out condoms or this, that, or, you know. You don't think kids are having sex either? Okay. I mean, they're kids. Okay, so we're just trying to educate people more than anything through sanction court. And sanction court, I'd invite you to come. I'll send you some information. Because it's very eye-opening, you know. Some people, you know, they're so embarrassed that their kids have gotten in trouble. And it's just not kids that are marginal kids. There's some kids that, especially over in Monmouth and Independence, where I know most of the folks, I'll see these kids and I go, really? You know, and then mom and dad are really embarrassed. And that's probably part of the reason they never come back. But it's just not a lower economical group of people that are in sanction court. You know, everybody's smoking pot. Okay, every kid, not everybody, but a majority of kids smoking pot. And it's going to be so much more accessible in 2015 because it's going to be just like when you and I were in high school. I can remember my buddies, they had an older brother, and they go, hey, Joe, can you get us some beer, you know? Okay, you know, because he could go buy it. You know, I know it's against the law, but Joe's brother would be, go ahead and give it to my buddies. And it's going to be the same way, I think, with pot. In that, hey, you know, hey, Marty, can you get me some pot? We need some pot.
So I guess where I'm going with this.
Do you mind if I give you a little bit of history?
Sure.
Sanction court out here?
Yes, but I just want to, I want to, I would love to hear history. I wanted to, I'm, the point I was trying to make was prevention. So, because we've got a citizen here from Monmouth who voiced her, you know, like, I'm completely against this. And I see why. Taxes are high in Oregon, period. But I wanted to confirm that sanction court is under this umbrella.
Amy, and go talk to service integration teams, too. They have a service integration team here in Fall City.
I know. I go every month. But the point I'm making, I guess I'm not making it, is prevention is a big part. And if you have, you know, a 7% rate of recidivism, if those prevention pieces go away, the problems are just going to get bigger. The pot smokers are going to turn into meth heads and heroin and this and that. The stealing from the grocery store is going to turn into going in a home and felony armed robbery. So I guess that's my point, is prevention. I want to make sure that we know prevention is being covered
prevention
under this umbrella.
Is why we're here tonight, too.
Right. And I don't think it's talked about enough,
it's
I guess.
It's all part of the system. I mean, the system doesn't...
It's the whole umbrella.
It doesn't work. Everybody's not working. And you know service integration. It's the same type of a deal.
Right.
I mean, in order for the people who are coming out of jail, we'll skip the patrol and we'll come out of jail now, we have to be able to help that person be productive. So, and that's... Marty has several programs that are very good at that. That his running with Theo, running or walking. Are you rocking?
Both.
But I mean, it's a personal thing. The PO and the probation person doing this together, kind of a lifting up thing. So that's all a part of the piece. The deputies, you'll read all the time about them being a piece. But if that system breaks down, those things kind of break down a little bit at a time. But
right.
But our hope is what you're saying is to preserve that,
right,
and maybe even strengthen it.
That's one of the things we hear about less patrol, less convictions. I think the bigger picture is prevention of a 13-year-old, preventing them from being a criminal at 18, is huge, a huge piece that people don't think about, especially cities with their own police departments. So that was what I wanted to say.
And the thing about the sanction court are the consequences. I mean, we make them go out and pick up trash,
right?
And they hate that, you know, and that's a great deterrent for kids. You know, I hear mom and dad saying, oh, you know, little Johnny or little Susie, that's embarrassing to them.
Right.
Well, they should have thought about that when they were, you know, stealing something from the local grocery store.
When we see people we know, we wave really.
No, you do. No, that's right. I know exactly what you mean.
I'd love to hear the history, but we don't have to do it tonight.
I'd be happy to. I happen to be the first sanction court coordinator that Polk County had, and I started one here in Falls City back in 2000, and so we can talk even afterwards, right, and I can give you some history on that and give you a little bit more.
Okay.
I guess one of the questions I would have for you, Amy, is because I don't know, and so I'm asking you because I don't know, is to have some of these prevention, proactive activities, don't we need the city and the community to tell the county, that's what we want you to do? That's what we need you to do for us?
Yeah, and the superintendent has approached the sheriff, and the sheriff said, I'd love to do it, but I can't right now.
With regard to...
And
right.
They used to.
And they used to. And Shop with the Sheriff obviously still happened, and that was amazing. But I don't think everyone sees the big picture that I have the advantage of seeing. And the prevention piece is huge. And that's just my background as a social worker to think of that first. And so that was why I brought the prevention piece. People just don't think about the prevention.
Well, we do.
Getting back to the schools, I used to go to quite a few of the schools and give presentations, and yes, we used to bring our boats from the Marine Patrol, which are owned by the state of Oregon. They're not our boats, by the way. But just an example, since 2008, we used to have a forestry patrol deputy that patrolled the forest lands out here. We used to have deputies on point. We used to have joint operations for seatbelt enforcement with cities. DUI enforcement, we used to be part of that. We used to have a forensics computer deputy. We used to have a traffic crash deputy that worked with OSP to reconstruct traffic crashes. We were active with dump stoppers and cleaning up illegal dump sites, excuse me. Prescription drug take-back programs, we used to be part of that. We used to be part of Neighborhood Watch. We still barely are doing some of those. And we used to be a big participant in National Night Out. We barely get to those now. All of that's gone. Those things that I just told you about, we don't do those anymore. I don't have the resources. I want to go back to doing a lot of those things. I want to be back in the school, you know, as the commissioner said, dealing with the youth early on is what we need to do.
No, I'll tell you about drug court, the adult side of drug court, that's prevention too. And it's at the earliest prevention too, because what it does by having the adults, and sometimes the highest risk adults who have had repeated drug convictions are the ones that are the most effective. And Mr. Ainsworth is part of that too. Marty's involved in that. I put one of my prosecutors in there. I spend that resource for several hours each week. I take my domestic violence prosecutor and and I've nominated her to be part of that program. That breaks the cycle of drug abuse, family drug abuse. And how many clean babies have been born in the drug abuse program?
25.
Yeah. So that breaks the cycle. Talk about children here. That breaks the cycle of child drug abuse over and over again. So at the adult level, that's a very effective prevention.
Figure out how much money that saves.
Right.
To have a drug-free baby.
I want everyone else to figure that out.
Right, right. But I almost feel decadent doing that because it takes a huge resource of my prosecution resource away from the office each week. But I think it's a good resource to use because I know how much prevention that really, the benefit that reaps in doing so. But it's always on the bubble. And like Sheriff talks about things he can't do, that's always a decision point. But can I continue to do that given our resource challenges? But we choose to do it in my office, you know, each month because it's a positive thing in the long term.
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit more about drug court now that you got it because I love drug court, okay, because it helps people get their lives back, is what it does. You might have to read that. Because, and Marty will tell you the same thing, it's very rewarding to see somebody go through the program drug-free. Their kids have all been in foster care. They're drug-free for 270 days. They have to be drug-free for 270 days. They get UA, they have different colors on each phase. There's 1 through 4 phases. But when they graduate, you can see the transformation from the picture when they first came into drug court, especially with folks that are on meth, to when they graduate. They're like new people. They're completely new. And the thing that I enjoy most about it is that their kids will be back in their custody. And they have their mom or dad back. Or their parents come. You know, and now I have our daughter or son back. And for us, if you want to talk about economics, I call it economic development at the very beginning. Because these folks have taken from society for a long time when they're in drug court. And these are hardcore drug addicts. They've been taking forever. And now, in order for them to graduate, if they don't have a high school diploma, they get a GED. If they don't have a driver's license, we help them get a driver's license. Because in order to get a job, you have to almost drive, unless you live right in the city. And then you have to have a job or continued education. When they get a job, they now are giving back to society. They're paying taxes. Their kids are back. Sure, they might still need a little help. I'm not saying that they're all going to be scot-free and, you know, off the public dollar. But to get their kids back from foster care, I mean, it costs $1,000 or more for each kid in foster care a month. So it's economic development because that money's coming back into the system instead of always being going out. And I'd encourage you, anyone here in the audience, to come. Graduation is February.
5 weeks from yesterday.
Whatever that February is. It's very emotional. I mean, it's emotional for me, and I'm kind of an emotional guy anyway, but you can see that. I mean, these people have gotten their lives back. And sometimes people hit bottom at 20 or 21. But we have someone that's in there right now that's 70? 70. He finally hit bottom at about 68. And now he's back. And he's very enjoyable. He just said, you know, I just have got to stop this. So it's one of those umbrella things like you're talking to Amy about the number of things.
All public safety.
Sure, just because it makes the streets safer.
Right.
And this is all about livability for me. You know, I've lived in Polk County my whole life. My mom lives in the same house I grew up in Monmouth, and my mother-in-law lives in Independence. I mean, I want them to feel safe, whether they're in town or out of town. I mean, that's what it's all about. It's a livability. Who wants to come to a county where it's a free-for-all? I don't. Thank you. Thanks, Amy.
All right. See that you want to put your hand up.
Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Lori Albert, and I live at 315 Whitman Street in Monmouth. And I am a voluntary public safety service person. I represent no person, no agency tonight other than myself. And I've heard, you know, so many good things tonight in response to this levy, which of course obviously will affect me as well. I too am on a limited income, and my taxes, I'm just going, I don't even have kids in school yet, I pay Central a lot of money. But that's okay. You know, that's how it goes. I have been a volunteer public safety person for 20 years, give or take. And I am going to choose to support the levy from one simple position. You're going to hear a lot of points from individuals who know exactly what they're talking about. There's so many facets to think and review. And I'm just going to give you one sliver, and I hope everyone thinks about it, because trust me, I do. And when my tone goes off or my pager goes off to come and help someone, I've made the commitment that I'm going to do it for free, because I care about you, and because that's the commitment I made when I did my training and took my vows, so to speak. And everyone that I work with, whom I respect, and I don't care which agency I've ever been with, there are give and take, some that I like working with more than others. But, you know, for the most part, we're all out here for the same reason, and that's to provide a service and to give back to the communities that we've chosen to live in and serve. And if a call comes out after 10 p.m., because a drug faction or someone who wants to go have a little more fun than, you know, than I want to think about happens to shoot or stab somebody, we still have to take care of them. Okay, so we leave and we go take care of them. We don't know if we're going to have a standby situation. Most of the time, you would have, an officer, sheriff's or city police, come out and stabilize your scene so that you can go in and you can do that job or take care of that person that's going to bleed to death or die or, you know, have a heart attack because they're so scared they just drop or whatever. And it hasn't happened yet. It's not to say that it won't. It's not to say that it couldn't. But I would like to know that if the transporting agency decides that because they don't have a standby officer coming to watch that scene, they're not taking that call. They're not going to come out and do it. So what do I tell the person that I've come to take care of? Oh, I'm sorry, there's no deputy that can come out because they're not on shift or they can't come out and patrol. And do we just throw them in a car and take them somewhere? We've already initiated care. I've already come out and chosen to take care of that person. Do I just sit there with them and hold their hand until 8 in the morning until somebody can come out and do something? Sometimes those folks don't have a choice, you know. And I don't want to be the one to lose somebody that way. So, you know, it's just another thing to think about. You know, and I'm really honest to God, every single one of you, I would come for you, you know, if that's what we needed to do. And I would come anyway, knowing that nobody's going to come and stay along with the scene. And all of us would. And that's what we do. That's why we're here for you. So when you think about all the other factions that weigh in, take a moment and think about those of us on this side of it, you know, who really... We don't really have a buy-in. We have just chosen to give you us, and because that's where your tax base is, you know. And I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Who was next?
Rod. My name's Rod Buchanan. I'm from Dallas. business owner. I just want to make a couple statements to the whole crowd. I've made this statement before, in other meetings as this is. I just want people to understand the cost factor here. I had a window broken on my car not too long ago to steal a Bible out of my car. It was my wife's Bible. It was in the case. They took it out of the purse. They took it. It cost me about $350 to have a window replaced. That window, I could have used my insurance to pay for that. My deductible is $500. The cost for a house of $200,000 is $90 a year. If you divide that by 365, it comes up to a little less than 25 cents a day for protection in our county. And all these people have already told you what they need that money for. It's less than 25 cents a day. It cost me $350 approximately for a window. We've talked before also about commerce in this county. We have businesses. I'm quite involved in businesses all over the place within our region here, and helping to develop, bring new businesses to our county. And we have businesses that will not come to our county right now because they can't get the protection that they need. I'm talking about wine industry people. I'm talking about, unfortunately, we're going to be talking about grow places for marijuana in the future. I'll guarantee you that's going to bring more crime to us. And we're going to be paying for that. And if we don't have somebody to help that, these people won't be able to do their jobs. We're going to be without. And we will lose a lot of economics in this county. You start losing economics, you start losing more tax base. The value is going to go down more and more and more. If we don't get something passed for this process, we don't even just lose the financial side of it, but we'll start losing people. And people moving out, then we pay less in taxes, and the tax base stays the same, so everybody's else is going to have to pay more anyway. So I'm just kind of helping you understand the cost factor here. We are talking less than 25 cents a day for protection. And cost factor that, like I said, I paid $350 just for a window. So that's my part. Thank you.
Russ Knoll, Oak Grove Road area up west of Salem. A lot of people seem to think that the only thing we're going after here is money for the police. And the incorporated areas, major ones like West Salem, they have the Salem Police Department to patrol. Independence, Monmouth, Dallas, Grand Ronde, they have their own police departments. The fact is that everything else, district attorney, juvenile, adult corrections, the jail, rural patrol, that all comes out of Polk County. So a lot of this levy is for that, not just the police. My wife and I live on a limited income, and even if we didn't, if we ain't safe, so what? You're going to be spending it on windshields, having your own house rebuilt after somebody vandalizes it. How can we, as individual citizens, help? How can y'all help? A lot of you are here from Falls City, obviously, but you know people in Monmouth, Independence, Salem. If we were to start a chain, or what they call a phone chain. If every one of you call two people, assuming most of you are pro, let me call two people and say, hey, go to one of the meetings, hear for yourself what's going on. Letters to the editors. We can all help. We can't put it all on them. That's it.
Thanks. Anyone else?
I just have a question. I think someone
name for the record, though, please.
I'm Dave Simmons. I think someone said that the total number of additional employees as a result of the levy was going to be 100. Is that correct?
No, that's incorrect. It would be 22. It would take us up to 100.
Okay, so it's 22 total for...
Total.
Okay.
For the, all across public safety's departments that we have in the county.
Okay. Okay, is there any other departments that are going to see increased personnel?
No, this public safety levy is specifically for public safety.
Anyone else? Panel? Closing statements? Anyone?
I'm just glad you showed up. I'm sorry that it's too bad that Fall City was playing basketball tonight. Because my buddy Jim Orr is the new basketball coach here, you know. So.
Something specific to the levy, please.
Well, I guess it would be.
Can you stand up so that we can hear you?
Yeah. Rose Dorn, I would just like to ask or make a comment. You're talking about needing police officers, sheriff, you know, department needs help, courts need help. You know, all these people need help. I'm having a real hard time, and you're talking about drug court. I'm having a real hard time with giving the wrong message, I think, to our youth by sanctioning marijuana, marijuana grow places. I have a serious issue. I understand nobody from Polk County went this year. I don't know if they went last year to this sex clinic that was held earlier this year. And in that sex clinic, I was appalled. I couldn't believe my ears. And I went home and I researched it myself. In this sex clinic, 16 school districts in this state went to this sex clinic. And they had children down to 11 years old. And they taught them orgies, encouraged them to go and get
Can we get right to the issue about what this has to do with this levy question, please?
Well, it has to do with your needing all these deputies, etc. But the problem is, if we didn't encourage this kind of stuff with our youth and our school system doing it in the first place, I think that would be real helpful not to have to need all of these.
We're not the family values police here, so.
Extra help. So, anyway, that's one of my comments. I could say more, but that's just one.
We're out of time, but thank you for that. So, this should conclude our meeting for tonight. Thank you all for coming. Please, if you don't have an agenda, pick up a copy in the back room because it gives our schedule the balance of the hearings that we'll have. Thank you for coming. We're adjourned.